Introduction. This chapter covers hazardous materials incidents, mass casualty incidents, the National Incident Management System, NIMS, and terrorism awareness. You should be able to identify the signs of a hazardous materials incident and prevent injury to yourself and to others in the first minutes of the incident. Because you may be called to assist with a mass casualty incident, you should understand the purpose of an incident management system and the framework of the NIMS. Your knowledge of basic triage and your ability to use the START triage system are also important. The last section of this chapter is designed to increase your awareness of terrorism. In addition to defining terrorism, you will learn the types of structures terrorists might target and how terrorists might use explosive, incendiary, chemical, biologic, and radiologic agents to cause mass destruction. You will also learn the importance of safety, preparedness, and the use of the Incident Command System, ICS. Hazardous Materials Incidents. Hazardous materials, HAZMAT, are any substances that are toxic, poisonous, radioactive, flammable, or explosive, and can cause injury or death with exposure. During a HAZMAT incident, your top priority is to protect yourself and bystanders from exposure and contamination. A very important step when handling any HAZMAT incident is to identify the substances involved. Federal law requires all vehicles containing certain quantities of hazardous materials to display a HAZMAT placard, which is a large diamond-shaped indicator placed on all sides of transport vehicles that carry hazardous materials. When you see a HAZMAT placard, you know that a potential problem could exist. You will have to find the proper response to the problem before beginning patient treatment. The placard should also have a 4-digit identification number, which can be used to identify the substance and to obtain emergency information. The Emergency Response Guidebook, published by the U.S. Department of Transportation, lists the most common hazardous materials, their 4-digit identification numbers, and the proper emergency actions to take to control the scene. It also describes the emergency medical care of patients who become ill or injured after exposure to these substances. This guidebook is updated every 3 to 4 years. You should carry an up-to-date copy of this guidebook in your vehicle. You can download a free copy of the guidebook at the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration website. Unless you have received specialized training in handling hazardous materials and can take the necessary precautions to protect yourself, you should keep away from the contaminated area or hot zone. As soon as you recognize that a hazardous materials incident exists, notify your dispatcher so other responders will be aware of the situation. Once the trained HAZMAT rescuers have been properly protected, these rescuers need to identify the source of the hazardous materials and remove anyone who has been exposed to the hazard. Sometimes HAZMAT teams can stop the escape of the hazardous material by shutting off a leak or by absorbing spilled chemicals. Once people have been removed from the contaminated area, they need to be decontaminated by trained personnel, assessed for any injuries, given necessary emergency medical care, and transported to a hospital. Very few specific antidotes or treatments exist for most HAZMAT injuries. Consequently, the emergency treatment you can provide to patients who have been exposed to hazardous materials is usually aimed at supportive care. Because most fatalities and serious injuries sustained in HAZMAT incidents result from breathing problems, you must constantly reevaluate the patient's vital signs, including breathing status, so that a patient whose condition worsens can be moved to a higher triage level. Because of the unique aspects of responding to and working at a HAZMAT incident, as an emergency medical responder, EMR, you should receive specific additional training in hazardous waste operations and emergency response, often referred to as HAZWOPR, to the emergency medical response level. Mass casualty incidents. As an EMR, you may face situations in which there is more than one sick or injured person. These situations, known as mass casualty incidents or multiple casualty incidents, may range from a serious motor vehicle crash with 3 or 4 injured people to a building explosion with dozens of injured people. A mass casualty incident is defined as any time there are more patients than resources, ambulances, either on scene or en route, ready to treat and transport patients. In these types of situations, how do you determine which patient to treat first? you must first be able to recognize the situation as a mass casualty incident. These incidents require a very different method of operation from routine emergency medical calls. During some mass casualty incidents, you may be on the scene 15 to 20 minutes before additional assistance arrives, and it may be 45 to 60 minutes before enough rescue resources are available. No easy formula exists for deciding when to shift from normal operations into the techniques of the mass casualty incident. Simulations provide realistic situations, but there are many variables, including the severity of the crash, access routes, available resources, response times, levels of emergency training, and overall experience of the EMS system. Your goal should be to provide the greatest medical benefit for the greatest number of people and to match patients' medical needs with appropriate treatment and transportation. To accomplish this goal, you must identify those patients most in need of treatment and those who can wait. The visual survey, the eye sees it all. As you are on the way to the scene, you should mentally prepare yourself for what you may find. Perhaps you have responded to other accidents at the same location. You should ask yourself the following questions. Where will additional assistance come from? How long will it take for them to arrive? When you arrive at the scene of a major incident, force yourself to stay as calm as possible. Make a visual assessment of the entire accident scene. This visual survey, as part of the scene size-up, gives you an initial impression of the overall situation, including the potential number of patients involved and, possibly, the severity of their injuries. The visual survey enables you to estimate how much and what kind of assistance you will need to handle the situation. Your initial radio report, creating a verbal image. The initial radio report is often the most important radio message of a major emergency because it sets the emotional and operational stage for everything that follows. As you prepare for that first vital report, use clear language, be concise, be calm, and do not shout into the equipment. Give the communications center a concise verbal picture of the scene. The key points to communicate are as follows. 1. Location of the incident. 2. Type of incident. 3. Any hazards. 4. Approximate number of patients. 5. Types of assistance required. Be as specific with your requests as possible. A good rule of thumb in mass casualty situations is to request one ambulance for every 5 patients. For example, for 35 patients, request 7 ambulances. For 23 patients, request 5 ambulances, and so forth. After taking several deep breaths, to give yourself time to absorb what you have seen and to try to calm your voice, you might give the following radio report about an intercity bus crash. This is a major crash involving a truck and an intercity bus on Highway 233, about 2 miles west of Route 510. There are approximately 35 victims. There are multiple people trapped. Repeat, this is a major crash. I am requesting the fire department, rescue squad, and 7 ambulances at this time. Dispatch additional police units to assist. Follow the protocols of your department when calling for additional resources. 1. Determine the perimeters for emergency vehicles only and exclude all other vehicles. 2. Establish a one-way route for emergency traffic to approach the scene and a separate one-way route for emergency traffic to exit the scene. This will prevent roads from becoming blocked for incoming units. 3. Allow adequate room for emergency vehicles that need to be close to the scene. 4. Keep vehicles and personnel at a designated staging area nearby if they are not needed at the scene. Casualty sorting, creating order out of chaos. The sorting of patients into groups according to their need for medical treatment is called triage. Triage is a French word that has come to mean casualty sorting in the emergency medical care field. The purpose of casualty sorting is to determine the order in which patients should be treated based on the severity of their injuries so that the most good can be done for the most people. Ideally, your casualty sorting system should be simple and fast, based on the skills and knowledge you already have. Do not worry about making a specific diagnosis before categorizing patients. A casualty sorting system is meant to provide the basis for a system of rapid, life-saving actions. A casualty sorting system focuses your activities in the middle of a chaotic and confusing environment. You must identify and separate patients rapidly, according to the severity of their injuries and their need for treatment. Avoid spending undue time treating the first or second patient you see. Remember, your job is to get to each patient as quickly as possible, conduct a primary assessment, and assign patients to broad triage categories based on their need for treatment. You should not stop during this assessment, except to correct airway and severe bleeding problems quickly. Your job is to sort, triage the patients. Other rescuers will provide follow-up treatment. Different communities use many variations of triage systems, and you will need to learn the specific role that you have in your community's triage plan. Many EMS systems rely on the START triage system because it is simple and easy to remember and implement. The Simple Triage and Rapid Treatment START system lets EMRs triage each patient in 60 seconds or less based on three primary observations: breathing, circulation, and mental status. The START triage system is designed to help rescuers find the most seriously injured patients. As more rescue personnel arrive, patients can be triaged again for further evaluation, treatment, stabilization, and transportation. This system also allows EMRs to open blocked airways and stop severe bleeding quickly. Triage tagging, telling others what you have found. Patients are tagged so that other rescuers arriving at the scene can easily recognize their triage level. Patients are tagged using colored surveyor's tape or colored paper tags, and this is based on the method determined by your local EMS system. The four colors of triage. The START triage system consists of four categories of triage, each with its own color code. Priority 1, red tag. Immediate care. Injuries are life-threatening. These patients cannot be stabilized at the scene and need to be transported to an appropriate medical facility as soon as possible. An example of a red tag patient might be a patient who has sustained severe chest trauma, is breathing at a rate of greater than 30 times a minute, and is pale and sweaty. Priority 2, yellow tag, urgent care. Care can be delayed up to 1 hour. These patients have sustained serious injuries, but they can survive a delay of up to 1 hour in getting to an appropriate medical facility. An example of a yellow tag patient might be a person who is in pain from a deformity to the femur, but is responsive to your verbal commands and is not showing signs and symptoms of shock. Priority 3, green tag. Delayed care, minor care, or hold, walking wounded. Care can be delayed up to 3 hours. These patients are the ones who are able to walk to a designated area away from the immediate area of the incident. They may have isolated upper extremity injuries, cuts, and bruises, but they are responsive and are not showing signs and symptoms of shock. Priority 4, gray or black tag. Patient is dead. No care is required. These patients have suffered injuries that are obviously incompatible with life, or they have no pulse or respirations. The first step in START, get up and walk. The first step in START is to ask everyone who can get up and walk to move away from the immediate rescue scene to a designated safe area. If patients can get up and walk, they rarely have life-threatening injuries. These patients are the walking wounded, designated as priority 3, green tag, delayed care. A patient who reports pain when he or she attempts to walk or move should not be forced to move. Now you can concentrate on the patients who are left in the rescue scene. The second step in START triage, begin where you stand. Begin the second step of the START triage system by moving from where you stand. Move in an orderly and systematic manner through the remaining patients, stopping at each patient to provide a quick assessment and tagging. The stop at each patient should never take more than 1 minute. Your job is to find and tag the priority 1 patients, those who require immediate attention. Examine these patients, treat life-threatening airway and breathing conditions, tag the patients with a red tag, and move on. How to evaluate patients using breathing, circulation, and mental status. The START triage system is based on the three observations: breathing, circulation, and mental status. Each patient must be evaluated quickly in a systematic manner, starting with breathing. Breathing, it all starts here. If the patient is breathing, you need to determine the breathing rate. Patients with breathing rates of greater than 30 breaths per minute are tagged priority 1 or immediate red tags. These patients are showing one of the primary signs of shock and need immediate medical care as soon as it is available. If the patient is breathing at a rate of less than 30 breaths per minute, Move on to the circulation and mental status observations to complete your 60-second survey. If the patient is not breathing, quickly clear the mouth of any foreign matter. Use the head tilt chin lift maneuver to open the airway. In a mass casualty situation, you may have to ignore the usual cervical spine guidelines when you are opening airways during the triage process. This is the only time in emergency medical care when you may not have time to stabilize every injured patient's spine properly. Open the airway, position the patient to maintain the airway, and, if the patient breathes, tag the patient priority 1, immediate, red tag. Patients who need help maintaining an open airway are priority 1, red tags. If you are in doubt as to the patient's ability to breathe, tag the patient as priority 1, red tag. If the patient is not breathing and does not start to breathe with simple airway maneuvers, tag the patient priority 4, deceased, gray-black tag. Circulation, is oxygen getting around? The second part of the triage test is the patient's circulation. The best field method for checking circulation, to see if the heart is able to circulate blood adequately, is to check the patient's carotid pulse. The carotid pulse is close to the heart. It is large and easily felt in the neck. To check the carotid pulse, place your index and middle fingers on the larynx and slide your fingers into the groove between the larynx and the muscles at the side of the neck. You must keep your fingers there for 5 to 10 seconds to find and measure the pulse rate. See Chapter 8, Professional Rescuer CPR. If the carotid pulse is weak or irregular, tag the patient priority 1, immediate, red tag. If the carotid pulse is strong or a radial pulse is present, move on to the mental status observation, the third step of the triage system. Treat patients with a weak carotid pulse for shock by laying the patient supine. Then try to stop any severe bleeding. Do not spend time controlling the bleeding yourself. Get the patient to assist with controlling the bleeding or ask one of the walking wounded, priority 3, green tag patients, to help. These patients are often eager to assist with emergency treatment. If the pulse is absent, tag the patient with a priority 4, deceased, gray-black tag. Mental status, open your eyes. The final part of the triage test is the mental status of the patient. This observation is performed on patients who have adequate breathing and adequate circulation. First, determine whether the patient responds to verbal stimuli. Ask the patient to follow a simple command. Open your eyes. Close your eyes. Squeeze my hand. Patients who can follow these simple commands and have adequate breathing and adequate circulation are tagged priority 2, delayed, yellow tag. According to the AVPU scale, which is described in Chapter 9, Patient Assessment, such patients are considered to be alert and responsive to verbal stimuli. A patient who cannot follow this type of simple command is unresponsive to verbal stimuli, according to the AVPU scale. Tag these patients as priority 1, immediate, red tag. Start is just the beginning. In every situation involving the sorting of casualties, your goal is to find, stabilize, and move priority 1 patients first. The START triage system is designed to help you find the most seriously injured patients. As more rescue personnel arrive at the scene, the patients will be triaged again for further evaluation, treatment, stabilization, and transportation. As more EMS personnel arrive, you should turn over the responsibilities of triage to a person with more training. Each mass casualty scene should have a person designated as the triage officer. Remember, injured patients do not always remain in the same condition. The process of shock may continue, and some conditions will become more serious as time goes by. As time and resources permit, go back and reassess the condition of priority 2 and priority 3 patients to detect changes in their conditions that may require upgrading the patients to priority 1, red tag attention. Working at a mass casualty incident. You may or may not be the first person to arrive at the scene of a mass casualty incident. If other rescuers are already at the scene when you arrive, be sure to report to the incident commander before going to work. Because many activities are going on at the same time, the incident commander will assign you to an area where your help and skills can best be used. The incident commander, based on training and local protocols, is in charge of the rescue operation. An effective incident command system, ICS, depends on integrated, agreed-upon protocols and procedures involving fire department, law enforcement, and EMS personnel. An explanation of the NIMS is presented in the next section of this chapter. If you are the first on the scene, you will have to make the initial overview, clearly and accurately report the situation to your dispatcher, and conduct the initial start triage. In addition, you most likely will be called on to participate in many other ways during mass casualty incidents. As more highly trained rescue and EMS personnel arrive at the scene, accurately report your findings to the person in charge by using a format similar to that used in the initial arrival report. Note the following information: approximate number of patients, number of patients who have triaged into each of the four levels, additional assistance required, other important information. After you have reported this information, you may be assigned to provide emergency medical care to patients, to help move patients, or to assist with ambulance or helicopter transportation. You may also be asked to assist with traffic control or to help provide fire protection, depending on your training. National Incident Management System. The National Incident Management System, NIMS, has been developed by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to provide a comprehensive, consistent, and unified approach to handling emergency incidents. NIMS is designed to effectively and efficiently handle the immediate response, mitigation, and long-term recovery of small and massive natural and man-made incidents. Effective implementation of NIMS helps local government agencies work with regional, state, and federal agencies during all phases of a major emergency incident. NIMS expands on the ICS in your department, which may cover only one type of agency. NIMS is designed to address a unified command structure that includes all types of agencies responding to any type of man-made or natural disaster. To accomplish this, NIMS is flexible and yet contains standardized components. The five components of NIMS and ICS are 1. Preparedness. 2. Communications and Information Management. 3. Resource Management. 4. Command and Management. 5. Ongoing Management and Maintenance. The Incident Command System is part of the Command and Management component of NIMS. The Incident Command System consists of six major features. These are 1. Standardization. 2. Command. 3. Planning Organizational Structure. 4. Facilities and Resources. 5. Communications Information Management. 6. Professionalism. As an EMR, your role falls within the Command and Management component of NIMS. You should understand the function of the ICS and understand your role within the ICS. In large incidents, you may be working with people from other agencies, so you need to understand how the multi-agency coordination systems ensure unified operating procedures. You should also understand the function of public information systems in releasing information about an emergency incident. The other components are vital parts of NIMS, but your role as an EMR is not as directly related to these functions. The federal government requires many agencies to use NIMS, and you may be required to become trained in this system. Different levels of training are offered through traditional and online courses. It is recommended that EMRs be certified in the following courses: ICS 100, Introduction to ICS, or FEMA IS 700, NIMS, An Introduction. Additional information on NIMS is available at the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, website. Take advantage of training in incident management. It helps you understand and work within the incident management system. Terrorism awareness. Terrorism is the systematic use of violence by a group to intimidate a population or government to achieve a political goal. Terrorism receives considerable public attention and is a high-profile crime. Domestic terrorism is caused by a country's own citizens. International terrorism is caused by people from another country. The bombing of an abortion clinic by an American citizen is considered a domestic terrorist event. The attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on September 11, 2001 were international terrorist events. A terrorist event may involve limited property damage with no injuries, or it may involve the deaths of many people. The success of terrorist events is measured by the intimidation produced, not just by the value of the property lost or the number of lives lost. Terrorists might use a wide variety of methods to incite terror, including the use of guns, explosives, fire, chemicals, viruses, bacteria, and radiation. As you study the agents and methods used by terrorists, realize that the type of events created intentionally by terrorists can also occur accidentally. For example, on April 15, 2013, the Boston Marathon bombings were the result of terrorists intentionally detonating two pressure cooker bombs. This event killed three people and injured an estimated 264 others. Compare that event with the one that occurred 2 days later on April 17, 2013, in West Texas, at the West Fertilizer Company, where an accidental fire detonated about 30 tons of fertilizer-grade ammonium nitrate, resulting in the death of 15 people and injuring more than 260 others. The causes of these two events were very different, but the result of both incidents was multiple fatalities and injuries to a large number of people. Both incidents required a cautious approach and evaluation of the scene, a large response of emergency personnel, the triage of a large number of victims, and a carefully executed plan for treatment and transportation of many injured people. Most agents used by terrorists are many of the same agents that produce hazards for EMRs in everyday accidents and emergencies. A building collapse caused by a natural gas explosion and a building collapse caused by a terrorist attack are both collapsed buildings. They share many of the same hazards and require many of the same safety precautions for rescuers. The accidental release of a chemical causes a hazmat emergency. An intentional release of the same chemical by terrorists becomes a terrorist event. Still, the safety precautions required for rescuers at both events are the same. A radiation leak from a nuclear power plant releases the same type of radiation that would be released by a terrorist. It is important to understand the agents and methods that are used by terrorists and to compare them with the agents that normally exist in communities. Many of the safety precautions used in accidental emergencies are the same precautions needed when dealing with terrorist events. Weapons of mass destruction. A weapons of mass destruction, WMD, is any agent designed to bring about mass death, casualties, and/or massive damage to property and infrastructure, such as bridges, tunnels, airports, electrical power plants, and seaports. These instruments of death and destruction include explosive, chemical, biologic, and nuclear weapons. To date, the preferred WMD for terrorists has been explosive devices. Terrorist groups have favored tactics that use truck or car bombs or pedestrian suicide bombers. Many previous terrorist attempts to use either chemical or biologic weapons to their full capacity have been unsuccessful. Nonetheless, as an EMR, you should understand the destructive potential of these weapons. Potential targets and risks. To understand the threat that terrorists pose to people and places, you need to consider the places that terrorists might identify as targets for terrorist activities. Remember, terrorists strive to incite fear to achieve a political or ideological goal, and their motives do not limit their choice of targets. Bridges, tunnels, pipelines, and harbors constitute infrastructure targets. The Washington Monument and the Statue of Liberty are examples of symbolic targets. Housing developments and automobile dealerships have been targeted by eco-terrorists. Computer networks and data systems might be targets for cyber-terrorists. Farms and agricultural installations might be targets for terrorists trying to destroy or taint the nation's food sources. Civilian targets such as schools, government buildings, churches, and shopping centers represent high-visibility targets for terrorists. Taken collectively, a wide variety of places representing most components of society might be considered as targets. In an open society in which people are largely free to move around as they wish, a person committed to performing a terrorist act can access most of the components of the infrastructure and turn any one of them into a target. Despite measures to heighten security, a terrorist event can occur at any time. You should always be alert for hazards, those associated with a terrorist event, as well as those connected to any other emergency. In any discussion of the risks of terrorist attacks, it is important to consider the number of terror-related deaths compared with other major causes of death. The number of deaths from terrorist events with deaths from other common causes. This comparison is not intended to minimize the tragedies of September 11, 2001. Rather, it is intended to help you gain some perspective and realize that terrorist events do not occur every day. Although you should be prepared for terrorist events, the majority of the emergency medical calls you answer will be for the other types of events. Agents and devices. A wide variety of agents and devices can be used to incite terror, including explosive devices, incendiary devices, chemical agents, biologic agents, and radiologic agents. You need to understand how these devices are used and what safety precautions you need to take to ensure scene safety for yourself, other rescuers, and bystanders. Explosives and incendiary devices. Explosives are used to produce a concussion that destroys property and inflicts injury and death. Some explosive devices, also known as incendiary devices, are designed to start fires. Incendiary devices can be as simple as a homemade firebomb or as complex as a highly technical device that may have been stolen from the military. An explosive device can be hand-carried or transported in a heavy truck. Often, the first indication that an explosive or incendiary device is present is the explosion or fire that results from the deployment of the device. In some parts of the world, suicide terrorists carry explosive devices on their person and set them off to kill themselves and others. WMD safety considerations. In times of increased concern about terrorist activity, travelers and the general public are urged to be alert for bags or luggage left unattended. Be aware of suspicious vehicles and report them to the proper law enforcement officials. If you are called to respond to an explosion, be alert for safety hazards that may have been created by the explosion or by a terrorist. Do not enter any area that may be unsafe until properly trained personnel are able to assess the risks. Be alert for the possibility of a second explosive device that is timed to explode when rescuers are on the scene. Use the same safety skills you developed for other types of emergency situations to keep yourself safe. When dealing with a WMD scene, it is safe to assume you will not be able to enter where the event has occurred, nor do you want to. The best location for staging is upwind and uphill from the incident. Wait for assistance from those who are trained in assessing and managing WMD scenes. Chemical agents. Many different types of chemicals can be used as terrorist weapons. Industrial process chemicals can be used to intentionally inflict harm on people. For example, chlorine is a gas that is used in many industrial processes and in water purification, but it was also used as a poisonous gas in World War I. Many of the chemical agents that could be used by terrorists are the same chemicals that create hazmat incidents when accidentally released. Chemical agents are liquids or gases that are used to kill or injure and can be divided into the following categories: pulmonary, choking agents, metabolic agents, insecticides, nerve agents, blister agents. Pulmonary agents. Pulmonary agents are gases that cause immediate harm and injury. Their primary route of entry into the body is through the airway into the lungs. Once these chemicals are inhaled, they damage lung tissue, which causes fluid to escape into the lungs and leads to pulmonary edema. Pulmonary agents cause intense coughing, gasping, shortness of breath, and difficulty breathing. Two common pulmonary agents are chlorine and phosgene. Phosgene gas is produced by burning freon, which is found in most domestic air conditioners. The odor of this gas is similar to freshly mowed grass. The symptoms of phosgene gas exposure may be delayed for several hours after inhalation of the gas. Although pulmonary agents could be weapons of choice for terrorists, these chemicals are also present in a variety of domestic and industrial settings and might also be encountered following an accidental release. The safety precautions for an accidental release are the same as the precautions for an intentional release by terrorists. Keep a safe distance away until properly trained hazmat personnel can handle the situation. Metabolic agents. Metabolic agents affect the body's ability to use oxygen at the cellular level. The most common metabolic agents are cyanides. Cyanides are produced in large quantities and used in gold and silver mining, photography, and plastics processing. Cyanide is also produced by the combustion of plastics and textiles, so there is the potential for cyanide poisoning in any house fire. Contact with cyanides produces shortness of breath, flushed skin, rapid heartbeat, seizures, coma, and cardiac arrest. The safety precautions for an accidental release of cyanide are the same as the precautions for an intentional release by terrorists. Keep a safe distance away until properly trained hazmat personnel can handle the situation. Insecticides. Insecticides are a class of poisonous chemicals that are inhaled or absorbed through the skin. Many insecticides belong to a class of chemicals called organophosphates. Absorption of these chemicals produces the following symptoms: salivation, sweating, lacrimation, excessive tearing, urination, diarrhea, gastric upset, and emesis, vomiting. The acronym for these symptoms is the word sludge. Because insecticides are readily available, they could be used as agents by terrorists. It is important to realize that far more emergency providers have experienced accidental contact with insecticides in routine calls than during terrorist-related events. If you encounter an incident involving an insecticide, keep bystanders far enough away to prevent additional contact with the chemical. If you encounter an emergency involving multiple people with sludge-like symptoms, assume you are dealing with poisoning from this type of chemical and call for assistance from a trained hazmat team. Do not make contact with contaminated patients until they have been through decontamination by trained personnel to prevent the spread of contamination. Nerve agents. Nerve agents are among the most deadly chemicals developed. These chemicals can kill large numbers of people with small quantities and cause cardiac arrest within seconds to minutes of exposure. Discovered by scientists in search of a superior pesticide, nerve agents are much stronger organophosphates than those found in insecticides. Nerve agents, like insecticides, block an essential enzyme in the nervous system and cause the sludge-like symptoms. Four of the most commonly mentioned nerve agents are sarin, somin, tobin, and V-agent, VX. In an emergency situation, your primary responsibility is to keep yourself, other rescuers, and bystanders from becoming contaminated. A well-trained hazmat team and special protective equipment is needed to remove and decontaminate people exposed to these agents. The Duodote Kit is a nerve agent antidote kit, NAC, that contains two drugs in a single auto-injector, which counteract the effects of nerve agents. Blister agents. When blister agents come in contact with the skin, they produce burn-like blisters. If the vapors of these agents are inhaled, they cause burns of the respiratory system. Blister agents produce pain, skin irritation, eye irritation, severe shortness of breath, and severe coughing. Blister agents include sulfur mustard and lewisite. As with other chemical agents, blister agents pose a threat to rescuers. Only well-trained and properly dressed rescuers with self-contained breathing apparatus should approach a scene that might contain these agents. This brief summary about chemical agents will not make you an expert. Rather, it is intended to provide you with enough information to help you realize the chemicals that might be used by terrorists, while deadly, are in the same classes as many of the chemicals encountered by hazmat teams. Anytime there are multiple people experiencing unexplained symptoms, you should suspect a common agent as the cause. Your primary role is to recognize that a problem exists and to avoid contaminating yourself, other rescuers, and bystanders. Stay upwind from any potential source and call for assistance from a properly trained hazmat team. Biologic agents. Biologic agents are naturally occurring substances that produce diseases. They may be bacteria, such as anthrax or the plague, or viruses, such as smallpox or hemorrhagic fever. Many biologic agents caused epidemics of disease in the past. Some of these agents, such as smallpox, have been wiped out. The last natural case of smallpox was seen in 1977. However, the smallpox organism has been maintained in laboratories and could be used intentionally to infect people. Although biologic agents are hard to disperse to large numbers of people, there is some concern that they could be used as a deadly weapon by terrorists. If terrorists intentionally dispersed a biologic agent, the organism would have to come in contact with people in sufficient quantities to produce an illness. These diseases have an incubation period, which is the time between exposure to a disease organism to the time the person begins to show symptoms of the disease. This means that if people were exposed to an infectious organism today, it might be several days before they would show signs of the disease. The first awareness of a biologic terrorist incident would probably come from hospital emergency departments and public health departments. Your role in biologic incidents is to report unusual patterns of illness and keep up to date on current information from your medical director and public health department. Safety considerations for EMRs include being alert for unusual patterns of diseases with flu-like symptoms. You should make every effort to review current information about disease trends from your medical director and public health department. Practice appropriate standard precautions for the signs and symptoms exhibited by every patient. If you have any indications that a call might involve a biologic agent, call for specially trained assistance and wait in a safe location. You need to be aware of when you should suspect the use of biologic agents. If the agent is in the form of a powder, such as in the October 2001 attacks involving anthrax mailed in letters, the incident must be handled by hazmat specialists. Patients who have come into direct contact with the agent need to be decontaminated before any EMS contact or treatment is initiated. Radiologic agents. Ionizing radiation is a kind of energy that is formed by the decay of a naturally occurring or man-made radioactive source. Radiation is used in hospitals, research facilities, and nuclear power plants, and it is also used for military weapons. Exposure to excess amounts of radiation can cause delayed illnesses, such as an increase in the rate of certain cancers. Exposure to large amounts of radiation can cause people to become violently ill within a few hours of exposure and may cause death within hours or days. Radiation is a hidden hazard that is similar to electricity. You cannot see, feel, or detect radiation with any of your normal body senses. Special instruments are needed to detect and measure the amount of radiation that is present. Some concern exists that terrorists could detonate an explosive device containing a small amount of radioactive material, known as a dirty bomb. Such an explosion would spread radioactive material over the area of the explosion and thereby contaminate anyone in the vicinity. In a situation like this, rescuers would have no means of determining whether radioactivity was present unless special monitors were used to check for radiation. Unless there was a warning issued about such an event, rescuers might not know about the presence of radiation. As an EMR, you need to be alert to warnings about incidents involving radiation. If the presence of radiation is suspected, you should stay away from a blast or suspicious site until specially trained teams check for the presence of radiation with special monitoring devices. Know what agencies in your community are equipped to handle such an event. Your response to terrorist events. The threat of terrorist activity is frightening to most people. It is important that all emergency responders have some awareness and knowledge of the various tactics and agents terrorists might use. Emergency response personnel need to develop an all-hazards approach for managing these emergencies. Keep in mind that agents used by terrorists could be the same agents that you are already trained to deal with: explosions, fires, toxic chemicals, hazardous materials, infectious diseases, and radiation. Although you may feel apprehensive about dealing with a terrorist event, remember the same safety rules apply in all emergencies: good scene safety and diligent use of standard precautions. To prepare for a terrorist event, master the skills that enable you to be a good EMR. Be prepared and know the limits of your training. Many types of terrorist events require you to stay a certain distance away to avoid contaminating additional people. Teams with special training are required to manage incidents involving special hazards. Be alert for secondary devices placed by a terrorist and set to detonate after emergency responders arrive at the scene. Terrorist events can affect large numbers of people. Establish an ICS as soon as possible. Know your role in working within the ICS. Treat these incidents as mass casualty situations. Establish good working relationships with appropriate local, state, and federal agencies. EMRs have a vital role in working at terrorist events. You can do the most good by following your training and not exceeding the level of skills you have. Always be alert for your safety, the safety of other rescuers, and the safety of patients. Remember, you cannot be an effective rescuer if you become a victim yourself.